This is a Travel Channel podcast. Check out Discovery Network's complete podcast lineup at discoverychannelradio.com.
It symbolized a time when anything that could be done would be done. A unique fusion of art and commerce. It redefined speed, comfort, and luxury in titanium, leather, and champagne. And the roar of its passing would be heard around the world. Concorde was a symbol for unattainable luxury, the ultimate definition of the jet set. Its basic story can be told in a few facts. Beginning in 1976, Concorde flew 2.5 million people at Mach 2. For its 100 passengers, there was only one class of Concorde service, and that was first all the way. The last year of its flight, a round-trip ticket from New York to London could cost $12,000. Only two of the world's airlines flew Concorde, Air France and British Airways. Due to noise restrictions, only two airports in the United States, New York's Kennedy and Washington's Dulles, were allowed to receive Concorde. There were only 14 Concordes, and in July of 2000, when one crashed in Paris, time began to run out. In early 2003, the decision was made to take Concorde out of service. It would never fly commercially again after October 24th, 2003.
We always knew that Concorde would retire one day, and we've come to that time, perhaps a little earlier than we anticipated. A number of things have led to big companies deciding to downsize their travel budgets, to reduce the number of options available to their premium clients. At the same time, the manufacturers, Airbus, came along to us and said that in addition to the budgeted maintenance requirement, we were going to need to spend an additional $60 million over the next 2 years. Some of that was Concorde specific, but most of it was related to changes that are made to all aircraft: new flight deck doors, new avionics, new systems, new security measures. So we were faced with a double hit. So that got us to the position where we decided that the time had come that Concorde should retire.
To be at the birth of technology is a wonderful thing, and I think in my whole life, all I've seen is things getting better, cars getting better, and, you know, televisions and radio and transport. We're at the death of something, at least the ending of a type of technology. I've never had this experience before. I've never had the experience of seeing something good, something that good, end.
Who knows what the future may bring, but at this point in time, there is nothing on the cards to replace it. So what we're doing is we're stopping the concept of people being able to cross the Atlantic in 3.5 hours, do a day's business, and be back in time for dinner at night.
It's a bad decision. I don't care if it loses money. This is something which Britain should be proud of. It's something the world should be proud of. And this is a step backwards in history, not a step forward.
Well, it made possible things that would be normally considered impossible, in that you could leave London at 9 o'clock in the morning and go and have a meeting in New York, and then literally, as I often did, come back that night. So this service is going to be hugely missed by business people. So I think it's very sad.
But above all, it's losing the opportunity to be in two places at once. With Concorde, as long as it was going, you could be in London at 10 o'clock in the morning and in New York at 10 o'clock in the morning.
I think the human race has always strived to do things better and greater and quicker. And the designers that thought of Concorde and brought it to fruition were really very, very clever people. It's a tribute to them that the aircraft has worked without modification so well for so long. It really is a clever piece of engineering to be able to carry people so quickly across the Atlantic.
This is a brilliant machine. This was flying before the advent of the microchip era. They didn't even have pocket calculators when they were designing this aeroplane. It was designed using a slide rule. So it hasn't got a high degree of automation. What computers it has got are analog, not digital.
The men and women who put together the idea of an airplane that would go 1,400 miles an hour and be a plane for human beings are the same people who could have written poetry. They simply wrote poetry with metal and their great minds and with mathematics.
What compelled such devotion from so many people? Was it the promise of luxury redefined through speed?
Each girl has a complete wardrobe in pale blue and in navy blue.
Was Concorde a symbol of celebrity that reflected light back on our more ordinary world? Or was Concorde an experience that simply cannot be defined?
I will never forget it because it was mid-January, it was freezing cold, 7 o'clock in the morning. Drove into work, 4 hours later I had a rum punch in my hand and I was on the beach in Barbados. Amazing.
But I remember sitting on board the aircraft with a small window and the first thing that came to me was my meal tray with a pot of caviar, a glass of champagne, and I thought, this is living.
It was just very exciting from the time you checked into the lounge until you stepped off at the other end, wherever that other end happened to be.
When you ask the regular Concorde passengers, they'll tell you it doesn't really matter how much comfort and style you put in the aircraft and what in-flight entertainment you have. The one thing you can't give them back is time.
3, 2, 1, now.
What was it like to fly Concorde?
The Eagle has landed. That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
The Concorde first flew the same summer that man first walked on the moon. Ironically, like Concorde, the technology and optimism that brought us so far seems now beyond us.
The technology to put man on the moon and the technology to fly safely with passengers at twice the speed of sound are similar. The big difference, of course, is that we stopped putting man on the moon in the 70s. We've carried on flying our passengers supersonically right through to the 21st century. The other big difference is if you want to be a spaceman, you have to wear a spacesuit. Our passengers are sitting there on the edge of space wearing lounge suits.
There was a time when the need for speed was a cultural imperative.
It was just after the Second World War that people started thinking in terms of traveling faster than the speed of sound. Chuck Yeager did it in the 40s, and in the 50s, the British and the French were independently thinking of a supersonic airliner. They came together in 1962 to form a joint venture to produce what became Concorde.
The world was at Concorde's command. This sensation of power was communicated to its passengers.
I flew from Washington to London, and when we got there, I said, my God, this is over so quickly.
When time shrinks in travel, this transfer is something akin to being an astronaut. And the Concorde is the nearest thing that anyone will have to being in a rocket, because you're leaving, the thing takes off, and literally 3 hours or less than 3 hours later, you're at your destination. You've crossed the Atlantic. You're in another culture, another time zone. I do the New York Times crossword puzzle. We got to London before I finished it. That hasn't happened to me on a flight before.
Like many of its elite passengers, Concorde was all about beauty and power. Its four Rolls-Royce engines were huge, noisy, and hungry for fuel.
Each engine, when it's at full reheat, is developing somewhere in the region of about 38,000 pounds of thrust. That equates to roughly the power required to power about 10,000 Leyland mini cars. So you can imagine that thrust is what gets the aircraft airborne.
These huge engines were so noisy that Concorde was prevented from landing in almost every single U.S. airport. This decision was ultimately to be one of the reasons that Concorde was to turn into a beautiful but impractical luxury item. But that beauty, while it lasted, was blinding.
One of the other unique features of the aircraft is the wing doesn't develop a natural lift like a normal aerofoil shape would, so the aircraft actually has to rotate to get airborne. It also needs to be traveling at a considerably higher speed than you would in a normal subsonic. About 250 knots is your normal takeoff speed, so an incredibly fast aircraft on the ground.
Concorde flew at 60,000 feet on the edge of space. Like other spacecraft, the faster it flew, the hotter its skin got.
Concorde, when it's in supersonic flight, gets incredibly hot. The aircraft actually stretches some 8 inches in flight when it's at supersonic cruise.
As a result, the airframe was coated with a special paint that kept the aircraft in one piece.
At one point, I feel heat, and I'm wondering where the heat's coming from, and I have the air conditioning coming on from above, and that's when I realize the heat's coming from the windows. You touch the windows, and the windows are hot.
Concorde's design was a synthesis of form and function. It was often referred to as the swan of the skies. But unlike the swans of children's books, it could become an ugly duckling at the pilot's command.
When Concorde comes in to land, it comes in at a very steep angle of attack. The pilot obviously needs to see the runway when he comes in for landing. That's the function of the droop nose and the visor that you see at the front of the aircraft. No other aircraft has this feature, and its pure function is to allow the crew to see the runway on approach landing and on takeoff. When the aircraft starts approaching the supersonic speed, the nose will lift up, the visor will come up and close the windows off, and that's to give the aircraft the smooth lines that it needs to be able to travel at speeds in excess of Mach 1.
All of this technology needed close attention. Adding to Concorde's high cost of operation was a flight engineer, a third crew member. He didn't fly the plane. He just made sure it could fly.
On the ground before the flight, my first duty is to walk around the aircraft and make sure that all the procedures have been correctly carried out to prepare the aircraft for flight. All the panels are closed, all the engines are secure, and all the components are fit for the next flight.
Once airborne, the flight engineer's job really began.
On the Concorde, the flight engineer has got a very unusual job in that, amongst all the normal flight engineer's duties, he controls the center of gravity of the aircraft, which is critical to the aircraft's flight envelope. The aircraft cannot fly without the flight engineer moving the fuel around the aircraft.
The Concorde's flight attendants were also a hand-selected elite.
Concorde fleet is like an airline within an airline. We've all been selected. We've all had to go through quite a rigorous interview process.
It took years working through the ranks before one was selected to fly on Concorde. It required lifelong dedication and a passion for the plane.
When I was a little girl, I used to watch the aircraft fly overhead. And I always dreamed that someday I'd be on board it. And I never really thought that my dream would come to fruition until I came to work for British Airways. And then that's all I wanted to do. I think I'll miss the people that I see on a regular basis because it is almost like a flying club for our regular passengers. We get to see them an awful lot of the time and we get to know them by their names and recognise them, and the same for them for us. And it'll be strange not seeing them once a week.
Concorde pilots were the ultimate elite, and they knew it. There have been fewer British Airways Concorde pilots than there have been U.S. astronauts.
You know, what's it like? What's it feel
like? Famous in my lunchtime.
Whenever there's a vacancy on Concorde for a pilot, we get far more applicants than there are positions, and so seniority comes into play. And we put them through a training course for 6 months compared to just 2 to 3 months for a conventional airplane. That's because the aircraft is more complex, because the aircraft flies at normal heights and at twice the height of conventional airplanes, normal speeds and at twice the speed of sound. It's rather like four aircraft rolled into one. There are almost four times as many systems.
Well, the airplane is a piece of magic. I mean, it's a magical piece of engineering. It's something that... it's a real one-off, as I say. It's extremely special in all sorts of ways. And the transition to supersonic flight is a non-event. You don't even notice it's happening. 1 minute you're flying along subsonic, the next minute we're at Mach 2 at 60,000 feet. And you're sitting there sipping your champagne and looking out at the curvature of the Earth and seeing the sky go darker. And we're up where the air is so rarefied, it's down to 1 pound to the square inch. We're on the edge of space. You go any higher, you're an astronaut.
I think the thing that attracts all pilots to Concorde is its beauty, its simplicity, and yet it's such a fantastically clever technological aeroplane. There are psychologists who tell us that it appeals to both sides of the brain. The technical side appeals to one half of the brain and the artistic side to the other. And it's also a fabulous aeroplane to fly. It's rather like a racehorse rather than a riding school hack, or a sports car rather than a trunk.
I'm very privileged to be able to fly this aeroplane. It's taken 27 years of experience to get into a position where I could fly the aeroplane, and I feel very honoured and privileged that I've been able to do it.
Well, I go on to 747 as a jumbo jet very briefly. I retire next year anyway, but they won't pay me off early. They're insisting that I convert to the jumbos, but it won't be the same. Too slow, take too long.
Concorde pilots can fly again, but the position of the flight engineer is now redundant.
I've got several things I would like to do, and I will be happy doing, but none of them will match the Concorde experience, unfortunately.
Clearly, Concorde is the flagship of British Airways and offers the best that we do and the best product that we have in terms of speed. But our other products offer different things. First class has a flatbed that is fantastic, the best bed flying. Now, we're now introducing in our business class Club World flatbeds across the entire network. We want to keep the spirit of Concorde going. We want to keep the spirit of superb elegance, really good service. Whenever you travel with British Airways, you get the experience that many of our customers have had on our flagship while she's been flying.
Good morning.
Well, good morning. Welcome.
Welcome aboard Concorde.
The Concorde experience was like no other. It began the second you checked in.
People on Concorde tended not to travel with a lot of baggage because a lot of the people would be day trippers in a sense. They'd be going from London to New York, say, for some meetings and be back home in London that night. So there was never a long queue, and you felt just a member of a very exclusive club, and in fact, you were.
They take your coat, they take your belongings, put it to the side, and you just come into a very large, swank kind of a lounge with leather seating, sofa lounge chairs and whatnot. And there's a big bar to the right with all top-shelf liquor.
Just before takeoff, we offer a canapé service before the passengers board the aircraft with champagne, which is sort of the start of the Concorde experience. We try and offer a varied range from sandwiches to salads and to a finished meal.
On each flight, we'll carry 21 bottles of champagne, 17 bottles of white wine and 17 bottles of red. And also, we get through about 4 bottles of port on every sector as well. For some reason or other, our Concorde passengers have always been partial to our ports.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Concorde room. Flight 2 today will be under the command of Captain Mills.
One of the beauties of Concorde is its elegance, its class, its style, and its apparent simplicity. To our customers, it's minimalist to an extent. We offer the best cuisine, the best wines, the best service in the air. Rather like the elegant swan, looks beautiful on the top. There's an awful lot of paddling goes on underneath. And to prepare Concorde each day for flight is a major operation. My colleagues in engineering will be starting to prepare the aircraft several hours before departure. The flight crew report 1 hour and 40 minutes before the flight.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Concorde supersonic flight number 2 is now ready for boarding at gate number 6. At this time, we'd like to welcome on board passengers seated in rows 11 through 26.
Your flying time is expected to be 3 hours and 17 minutes, and the weather for your arrival is
forecasted to be partly cloudy, with temperatures in the mid-70s. At this time, we'd like to thank you for flying with us today and for choosing British Airways.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. I believe you're sitting at row 11. Please go through.
You know, it was a designer plane, so there was lots of room, lots of pillows, lots of blankets. Although the Concorde being Concorde, they probably would weave one for you on request.
And the seats are amazing because it's not like any first class or coach seat where you could put the seat back. It's the entire seat jockeys back on one pivot point. It's like it's a bucket seat, like on a 69 Mustang, let's say.
3, 2, 1, now.
And it sort of sat back on its tail and just took off. And it was almost like being on a Disneyland ride, you know, sort of pinned into your seat, the fantastic sense of acceleration.
You feel the acceleration and you're not falling back in your seat, you're actually being rocked upwards.
You're actually sitting there, unleashing the power of 4 Rolls-Royce engines with afterburner. Maximum thrust. It's a sensation I'll never forget.
When the big things in the back kicked in and you went sonic, there was an ever-changing sign in the cabin which told you how fast you were going, at what altitude, and Mach 1, Mach 2, whatever. The seat of my pants knew I was going faster than I'd ever gone.
Once airborne, the party began. Concorde was more than a form of transportation. It was a rarefied social experience.
Having taken off, we will then sort of break open the bars, get everything ready, and serve the drinks that the passengers have ordered from us. Some of these people travel on it more than I do. And to be able to welcome them on board by their names without even seeing their boarding cards, they recognize you, they sit down, and I don't have to ask them what they want to drink. I don't have to ask them what they want to eat. If they're going to New York, then a lot of them will just want a bottle of water and maybe a light snack, sandwiches, and I'll just say the usual to them, and they'll say yes. They're going home, possibly for the weekend, then they might like a glass of red wine or white wine and the full meal. So that really does stick in my mind. It's like a very exclusive club with our regular customers, and I will miss that.
Flying the Concorde is not only convenient, it's a kind of social circumstance which makes for a club group. So those who fly the Concorde are Concorders. And somehow you smile a little more at people on the plane and get smiled at more frequently.
I remember once flying from London to New York, and a member of the president's cabinet was on board, and had his tie loosened, his shoes off, and I remember the captain came back and said, "Sir, the president of the United States is calling." And this gentleman got up, straightened his tie, put his shoes on, as though the president of the United States could see him. in a relaxed mode and went forward like a soldier to answer the call. That always tickled me.
Although a rarefied club, anyone could be admitted. All you needed was a $12,000 round-trip ticket.
Now we're seeing many, many more individuals who are saying, right, we know Concorde's retiring, we want that experience of a lifetime. We want to fly on this fantastic aircraft, we'll save up our money, and we'll take the trip we've always promised ourselves.
What we're feeling now is sheer exhilaration. We wanted to see the curvature of the Earth and experience the Concorde while it's still in service and spend first time on a trip like this in supersonic with my new wife.
Everybody's just so, they're just so happy to be on the aircraft, and it's just a wonderful atmosphere every time I've flown on her. You know, apart from the rich and the famous, it's everybody. It's everybody's dream to fly on this aircraft.
The best part of all this luxury was that many of the frequent business flyers could justify the expense. Their time saved was money earned.
Well, Concorde primarily is a business person's tool. It's always been designed to carry a business person between London or Paris and the East Coast of the United States. Those people whose time is money, their time is so valuable, they pay a premium price in order to travel and to make the trip in a short period of time to accomplish whatever they had to do.
The atmosphere on Concorde today I describe as somewhat ho-hum. You get on the plane. Many times I run into people I know in business. Many times I run into people I know just from flying the Concorde. You get to know the crew. You get to know the ground staff on a first-name basis on both ends. I board a flight at midnight in Bangkok. I travel the 12 or 13 hours back to London. I arrive in London at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. I get off the plane. I take a hot shower. I put on clean clothes. I eat breakfast. I get on the Concorde, and I'm back in my office in New York City by 10 in the morning. So I've flown 24 hours, and I've not missed any working time.
The time has come, ladies and gentlemen. British Airways invites all those passengers that are booked on the BA-002 to board Concorde for the very last time.
I've done a lot of Concorde flights in my time, over 200, and I also have a few Guinness World Records using Concorde, including fastest round the world. And in the early days, I tried to promote this wonderful flying machine. And today, it's a disgrace that we are having this so-called party. To me, it should be a wake, basically.
93 Heavy Taxi Alpha Golf Zulu, 3-1 left.
First Concorde was back in October of 77. He landed on runway 4 left. It was a pretty big news event at the time. A lot of media, a lot of helicopters in the area, a lot of people out there on the field, and it was a pretty exciting time.
Westward departure time.
I think Tower just gave her clearance.
We'll have to release brakes at about 3-7.
Guys, get ready.
Speedbird 2 Heavy, be advised, I happen to have the good luck of being here and issuing the first landing clearance to the Concorde here at JFK back in 77. Just want to say it's been wonderful working with your aircraft, and wish good luck to all the crews, and we're going to miss you.
That's the last time Concorde will ever be cleared from JFK for takeoff. There, she's rocking.
She's rolling?
There's the smoke. You go, baby.
Beautiful.
I know.
I'm starstruck.
You need a hug, man?
I know.
It was just unbelievable. And I just, heartbroken. Can't believe that it's it. It's over.
Yeah, she's gone.
Now, the sky is quieter, more lonely. A need for speed and luxury has been replaced by the need for volume and economy. But Concorde was about more than luxury. It was about technology, power, and optimism that the world could be brought closer together through speed.
As a kid, I would read science fiction, and so much of science fiction became fact in my lifetime, and I never thought I'd be part of a scene where one could fly supersonic planes as a matter of routine, and I'm very sad to see that part of the future disappear.
Normally, we think of technology is something that you advance upon. You have a great experience and you say, well, in a couple of years, this is going to be even better. Unfortunately, in a couple of years, this will just be a memory.
It's sad that this particular offering is going to be withdrawn. It's poetically sad because this shows us how far the human being has gone, how far the mind takes us, and what withdrawing it tells us in effect that we are retrogressing, and we should never retrogress. We must go forward.
You've been listening to a Travel Channel feature presentation.